And I'm Tolly.
And welcome to Wicked Within. This week, we're back with another true crime case, and I'm curious to hear if you've ever heard of this one. I don't think that you probably have, but I think that you're going to find it interesting, at least.
Okay. All right.
I, of course, hope that every week, but this one just might be particularly more interesting than some.
Okay.
All right. So, July 15th, 1976, in Chowchilla, California, should have been a simple summer day.
Chowchilla?
Chowchilla.
That's fun.
It's spelled exactly how it sounds. It was hot, the sun was shining, the kids were playing at the city pool, and all seemed well. But by that evening, it became clear that something was, in fact, very, very wrong when 26 children and their bus driver failed to return home after a routine day in summer school.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
This is a turn for the worst.
Yeah. Big one. In the 1970s, Chowchilla was a simple farming community. It would only take about 30 seconds to drive from one end of town to the other, and the population was around 4,300. Many people worked in the dairy industry, and their elementary school was, and actually still is, called Dairyland Elementary.
That's cute.
I actually really like that. Though the town was small and quiet, there were a lot of advantages to living in this peaceful community. Everyone knew each other and looked out for one another. The town was safe with a very low crime rate, and people kept their doors unlocked. There was a certain sense of security and invincibility for many of the children who grew up in this small town. The school district hosted summer school opportunities for kids whose parents needed to work throughout the summer, but this was an often enjoyable experience for the kids who would be taken to play at the city pool on hot summer days, which is actually basically all I ever wanted as a child. I was like a fish. July 15th, 1976 was no different. The kids spent part of the day at the pool before loading on the bus to go home. Ed Ray was one of the bus drivers that day. He was friendly, easygoing, and a hard worker, and a well-known and well-respected member of the Chowchilla community. The kids had an amicable relationship with Ed Ray, who they called Edward. That afternoon, the windows were down, and the kids were laughing and chatting with one another. Ed Ray dropped a few kids off at their respective bus stops, but then they noticed a white van that had seemingly broken down in the middle of the road. Ed Ray turned, maybe to go around the van or perhaps to offer assistance to the driver, but as soon as the bus doors opened, two masked men hopped on board the bus. One of the men immediately told Ed Ray to get out of the driver's seat and go to the back of the bus. At this point, some of the kids were more annoyed than anything else. Many of them were young, with some children as young as five aboard the bus that day, and they never really knew what danger was. But as the second masked man came into view, they saw a sawed-off shotgun in his hand and instinctively knew that something was very, very wrong.
Oof.
Ed Ray followed their directions and walked to the back of the bus before taking a seat. The first masked man sat in the driver's seat and began to drive away, while the other man stood at the front of the bus with the shotgun in his hands. The children looked behind them and noticed another masked man following behind them in the white van that they had seen earlier. Ed Ray was normally kind and soft-spoken, but as soon as the men boarded the bus, his tone changed and he told the children to do as the men said.
No.
There were 26 kids aboard the bus that day, ranging in age from 5 to 14. The masked man drove the bus into a dry riverbed surrounded by thick bamboo that was taller than the bus, making it nearly impossible to spot unless you knew where to look. The children and Ed Ray noticed another van already parked in the riverbed. The men backed one of the vans right up to the open bus doors. They told the children and Ed Ray that they needed to jump through the bus doors into the back of the van so that they wouldn't leave any footprints in the sand below. They packed the first van full of children before they backed up the next van and told Ed Ray and the rest of the kids to jump on board. The men had installed wood paneling along the walls of the vans and painted over the windows. This meant that the driver's area was cut off from the back of the van, and it also meant that the vans were completely pitch black.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is, as you know, really ideal for children who are famously, fans of the dark.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, parents were beginning to arrive home after work. They noticed that their kids weren't home and there were no signs that the kids had been there since morning. As family after family started realizing that the children were missing, the police soon realized the pattern. All of the children who were missing had been on Ed Ray's school bus earlier that day. The police began an intensive search of the area with parents driving around to see if they could locate the bus or any of the children. Just before sunset, an officer flying overhead noticed the bus in the dried riverbed. Madera County Sheriff Ed Bates arrived on the scene as soon as the bus was located. He noted the tire tracks that seemed to lead to the open bus doors and the way that the bus was so carefully hidden in the bamboo, and he knew he needed backup. Yeah, which was smart. You know, a lot of people don't like to share jurisdictions and stuff like that. And he was like, no, seems like a good time to call other people.
Yeah, good on him.
Yeah.
This looks suspicious.
I would classify this as concerning. He called Ed Brown, the governor of California at the time, as well as the local FBI field office to request additional support. 30 FBI agents soon arrived to assist in the search for the children. The families of the children were asked to remain at the local fire station as the search for their kids continued. The kidnapped children had to sit in those vans for what seemed like an eternity as they sped along winding country roads. They tried to comfort one another, but it was difficult to remain optimistic as the hours dragged on. Finally, the van slowed and the ride grew bumpy as they turned off the main road. After a full 12 hours in those vans, the doors opened and the men grabbed Ed Ray. They slammed the doors behind them before coming back a couple of minutes later to grab one of the children. One by one, they took the kids out of the vans, leaving the others in total darkness with no idea what was happening to their bus driver or their friends.
That's so stressful.
Yes. They're not well at this time. Yeah, as you can imagine. Yeah. As soon as they unloaded one van, they began unloading the other. Michael Marshall was 14 at the time and was the oldest child kidnapped that day. He and 5-year-old Monica Artery were the last two kids in the van. When the kidnappers came back, Michael decided to volunteer to go first, hoping that he could do something to make sure Monica would be safe. As Michael stepped out of the van, the kidnappers asked him his name and age before showing him a hole in the ground with a wooden ladder leading to a dark pit below. As Michael climbed into the hole, he heard the other children yell his name in joy, happy to see their older friends safe and sound. And Michael was relieved when he saw Monica climbing down the ladder to join the rest of her friends just a few minutes later. The children realized that the men had buried a large semi-truck underground. I've seen it described as like a van. I would not classify it as a van. It definitely looks more like a semi-truck. I don't know. Anyway.
Like the beginning part of it? Like the actual truck part?
Because what I think happened is, and I can't confirm this, but I think what happened is they basically dug it so that they could kind of like back this truck or this van into the hole and then fill in around it. So it was the actual like full thing. As far as I can tell, or at least it was when they pulled it out of there. Maybe it was just the trailer, and then they had, like, got a semi-truck and, like, lifted it up. I'm not entirely sure, but it was either just the trailer part of a semi-truck, or it was, like, a full, what I would classify as a semi-truck. I would definitely not classify it as a van. It was much larger than what I consider vans to be.
I picture vans as, like, the like, church giant like 12 people van,
right? Like a utility van kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, this was much larger than that, because in that trailer or truck or whatever, they found lots of mattresses scattered haphazardly across the floor. There was actually a full table toward the back of the trailer. Yeah, exactly. And the table had bread, peanut butter, breakfast cereal, and other food items, as well as large jugs of drinking water.
The kidnappers, I guess they were going to feed them, so there's that. That's nice.
I think that's kind of what they were thinking at first. They were like, okay, so if they have, so they haven't killed us yet.
Mm-hmm.
They've given us food. They've given us water. They made toilets out of the wheel wells. And they could hear the sounds of large fans indicating some kind of ventilation system.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, their relief was short-lived. The men pulled up the wooden ladder, threw a roll of toilet paper down to the kids and Ed Ray, and then covered the hole with a heavy manhole cover. The kids heard the sound of dirt being shoveled on top of them, and then nothing. They had been buried alive 12 feet underground.
That's terrible. That reminds me of a CSI episode.
Which one?
Where Nick?
Yes!
Gets kidnapped and then buried alive?
Yes, that happened. Yeah, I know exactly the one that you're talking about.
Yeah.
That happens in Bones, too.
Yes.
Yes.
Except they're in a car.
They're in a car.
Yeah.
Yes. They're in, I think, Brennan's car. So Brennan and Hodgins get trapped in the car underground.
Spoilers.
I'm not going to tell you if they survive.
Or what season or anything.
Because I don't actually know. So, yeah. But if you do happen to see either of those, I think that that's something that happens pretty early on. So.
That's like where my fear of being buried alive started, was those like CSI, and then it reinstilled in Bones.
The Nick one was particularly rough because he was actually buried in a coffin, was he not? Yeah. Or like a box. So
yeah, something small.
Right. Like he really couldn't like move around in there or anything like that. Whereas like at least Brennan and Hodgins, for one, they had each other, and for another, they had like a whole car to move around in, which isn't that comforting, but maybe a little bit more comforting than just having basically a coffin. Ugh. Yeah. Yeah. I liked Nick's character though. He was a good one. Though Ed Ray was originally hailed as the hero of the story, in recent years, it seems as though 14-year-old Michael Marshall was the true hero of the day. When the men buried them in the underground bunker, Ed Ray started to lose hope. But Michael told him that giving up wasn't an option. They had to get out of there. So Ed Ray and Michael worked together to look for ways to escape. They tried moving the manhole cover, but it was too high and too heavy to move, and they were exhausted. Ed Ray encouraged the kids to rest and recuperate so that they could strategize and try again later. Michael remembers that night. It would be silent, but then one of the kids would burst into tears and everyone else would start crying along with them.
Oh.
I know, which I imagine is very true.
Yeah.
After hours in the bunker, the situation was getting worse and worse. The food and water were gone and the fans had stopped.
Oh.
Which is super concerning because that's the air.
Yes.
One of the boys had kicked one of the blocks out from beneath a support beam, and the roof and walls of the trailer were starting to buckle. Dirt drifted through the weakening seams, and the kids began to scream and cry. Ed Ray and Michael decided that if they were going to die, they were at least going to die trying to escape. The pair stacked the numerous mattresses on top of one another right beneath the manhole cover. They took turns pushing on the cover with the kids cheering them on from below. Michael finally managed to move the manhole cover, but the opening was tiny, just about half a foot wide. Michael was a skinny 14-year-old, so he managed to squeeze through the tiny opening only to find another box filled with dirt.
Ugh.
So he started to dig. He dug until he was exhausted, and then he kept digging. But suddenly, a ray of light filled the opening and fresh air flooded into the trailer. They didn't know what they would find if and when they broke through. Would the men still be there with their shotguns in hand? Michael took a chance and climbed out to see if it was safe for the other children and Ed Ray to follow. A wave of relief hit him when he found the area deserted, but he soon realized that he had no idea where they were. Michael and Ed Ray worked together to get all 25 of the other children out of the truck as quickly as possible. It's estimated that they finally emerged from the hole at 8 p.m. on July 16th after spending 16 hellish hours in the truck that could have been their grave.
Oof.
So if you're adding it all up together so far, it's 12 hours in the vans and now another 16 hours underground. Yeah. The truck was completely buried and the location would have been impossible to locate if you didn't know where to look.
Mm-hmm.
As they took stock of their surroundings, the kids and Ed Ray heard noises like machinery. Oh. They didn't know if it was their kidnappers, but they had been gone for hours without food, water, or light, and they didn't know where they were. They had no choice but to check. As they approached, they saw a large rock processing plant, and they realized that they were in a rock quarry, of all of the places. Quarry. Whenever I think about rock quarries, I think about The Office. Again, it's not really spoilers, but there's a scene in season four. I don't know. It's the one where Jim buys his parents' house. Mm-hmm. Anyway, where Phyllis is like, oh, where's your house? And he's like, oh, on Madison Ave by the quarry. And Creed's like, hey, man, I live by the quarry. We should get together and throw things down there. And Jim says, definitely we should.
Definitely so. We should. I do anyway. Say definitely we should yes. a lot.
I do too. And it's specifically because of that scene that I say definitely we should. So anyway, this looms large in my brain, as do most scenes from The Office. As they approached the heart of the operation, they spotted men in hard hats. Ed Ray told the men that they were from Chowchilla and that they were lost, which feels like an understatement.
Yeah.
We're lost. Nope.
And kidnapped.
Buried alive.
And buried alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. By this time, the Chowchilla bus kidnapping had made international news, and the men immediately realized the severity of the situation. The police arrived and took photos of the children for evidence. They then loaded the children and Ed Ray onto a bus, which, in retrospect, probably not a super classy move, considering they were on a bus when all of their trouble started.
Yeah.
The rock quarry was located.
But like, you also can't put them in vans either.
That's true. I was thinking more like a fleet of cars, you know, like.
Oh, uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah.
You have a lot of people there. They have their own cars and like pickup trucks and stuff like that. Maybe just something that isn't, maybe something that isn't a bus or a van. Anyway. The rock quarry was located just outside Livermore, California, more than 100 miles from Chowchilla, so they brought them to the closest place that could hold all of them at once, the Santa Rita Rehabilitation Center, a.k.a. the local jail.
Okay.
I was like, interesting choice, dude.
Lots of interesting choices are happening.
Yeah, yeah. The bus, the jail. I mean, I get it. And to be fair, it didn't look that bad. Like, I've seen pictures of it. They have some pictures from that day, and it didn't really look that horrifying. But as they were coming in, one of the kids, who I will talk about at the end of this episode, she was like, as we were driving in to the rehabilitation center, there were fences that had barbed wire at the top, and she was like, why are they taking us to prison?
No.
And I was like, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But it was the 70s, you know, like, what is trauma?
Honestly, when you started out this episode of like in 1970, and I was like, here we go, 70s,
somebody's gonna make some dumb choices today.
Yep.
Yep. The kids were brought into a classroom in the rehabilitation center and were given apple soda and adult coveralls, since many of the children had removed their layers after hours in the stifling, still heat of July in California, which is also awful to imagine. If you'll recall, they went to the pool earlier that day, so a lot of them were actually wearing their swimsuits from earlier. Oh, yeah.
Babies.
The kids and Ed Ray were examined by doctors and interviewed by police, but they couldn't tell police much about their kidnappers since they had worn masks the whole time. By the way, I forgot to specify. This is already how I kind of imagined it, but when they say masks, they're talking about, like, the good old-fashioned, I'm robbing a bank, so I'm going to put pantyhose over my face. But they cut out the eye area, which I actually feel like is worse. Because then your eyes just look like deep, dark, black holes. Anyway. After 4 hours of questioning and medical examinations, they were allowed to go home. For the last time that day, the children loaded onto another bus. But this time, they were finally going to be returned to their families. They arrived in Chowchilla at 4 a.m. that morning, 36 hours after it all began. But unfortunately, it wasn't over. Even though the children were safe, their kidnappers were still out there, and they had no idea who they were or where they were. But the local police and FBI had a theory. In order to dig and go unnoticed in the rock quarry, the perpetrator, or perpetrators in this case, would have to have access to the quarry in the first place.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. I was like, this is stunning police work. They questioned rock quarry employees and soon received a promising tip. Other employees reported seeing three men digging a large hole near the quarry in the months leading up to the kidnapping, which if you see somebody, right, if you see somebody digging a large hole on your company property.
A hole in general, like, it doesn't even need to be large, like a human-sized hole.
anything vaguely human-sized hole, even if it is your job to dig things. The fact that you've dug a hole big enough for a body or many bodies is cause
and it's
for
like
concern.
Not because I'm assuming he found it suspicious because he was like, we didn't have orders to dig over there.
And it was more than one person.
Yeah.
It was like numerous people who were like, I saw this bitch just digging a giant hole over there. And I just thought, that's fine.
Yeah.
normal human hobby to just go out and just dig a massive hole.
Oh, we're trying to find some long lost treasure of Stanley Yelnats.
I have a lot of questions here. So one of the three men who was seen digging this giant hole was 24-year-old Fred Woods, and Woods had a record.
Dun, dun, dun.
Mm-hmm. 2 years earlier, Fred Woods had been arrested for Grand Theft Auto along with two other men, 24-year-old James Schoenfeld and James's younger brother, 22-year-old Richard Schoenfeld. All the men belonged to two of San Francisco's wealthiest families, so they were let off with a small fine and probation.
Of course.
Yes, as they do. It's a tale as old as time. But the eyewitness sightings were enough to get a warrant to search Fred Woods' father's estate. And there, they found everything that they needed to make their arrests. And if you thought up until this point, you're like, all right, so they used masks. They obviously, like, they hid the bus. They backed the vans up so that the kids wouldn't leave footprints in the sand. You know, they drove around for far longer than they needed to, 12 hours of driving, and they were only going 100 miles, which does kind of seem a little weird to me, but I didn't really fully understand why they made that choice or how they got their gas to last that long.
Super confused, I guess.
Yeah, I have no idea. All I'm saying is my car could not make it for 12 hours.
Mm-mm.
On a single tank of gas.
No.
That's all. Anywho, but if you thought up until this point, that's pretty smart. This is where you're going to be like, wow, what a bunch of fucking stupids. Anyway, they found a document labeled plans with a detailed timeline of the kidnapping, as well as a list of contingency plans in case something went wrong. So things are going really well. Yeah. Along with this damning evidence, they also found one of the shotguns that had been used in the crime and a draft of the ransom note.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They were planning, so the kidnappers were planning on asking the state of California for $5 million for the safe return of the children, but they never even got that far. They tried to call the Chowchilla Police Department after they left the children and Ed Ray buried underground, but the phone lines were jammed due to the high quantity of calls coming to the area from all over the world. Because again, this is 1976, so a technological overload was very, very possible. Yep.
Yeah.
So the men took a nap, hoping that the lines would be clear by the time they awoke. But the next time they turned on the TV, the children and Ed Ray had already escaped from their makeshift prison. Which does feel very satisfying, doesn't
so
it?
So satisfying. I just imagine them like, oh, we can't start the ransom yet. Let's just take a little snooze. Mm-hmm. They wake up, turn on TV, jaws drop. Frozen.
Yep.
Dumbfounded. Emphasis on dumb.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. That's kind of how I imagine it as well.
It's satisfaction.
It really is. Richard Schoenfeld soon turned himself in, and James Schoenfeld was found not too long after. Fred Woods was eventually arrested by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in Vancouver, British Columbia.
He went to Canada?
Yeah, he went. He escaped.
Wow.
He used a fake passport.
What?
And, yeah.
I guess it's better. It's easier, not better, but easier in the 70s.
Yes, I think so. Especially if you're filthy rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. He actually probably would have remained on the lam for a lot longer if he would have just kept his mouth shut and been like, this is who I am. I think what it was he sent like a letter back home or something like that. And he like addressed the letter using like his own name and used his address in Canada or something.
What really, again,
the emphasis in dumb in this case. Yeah. James told the police that he and Fred were in debt. They knew that they wanted to kidnap multiple children because they needed multiple millions of dollars. And the easiest way to do that in a timely manner was to kidnap a school bus. They knew that people would be willing to pay for the safe return of children. The men pled guilty to all 27 counts of kidnapping, but they refused to plead guilty to 8 counts of bodily harm. If convicted of the kidnappings, the men would receive life with the possibility of parole. But if convicted of the kidnappings and bodily harm, they would be given life without parole. 14-year-old Michael, 9-year-old Jennifer Brown, and several other children testified in court about their psychological and physical trauma. And all 3 men were convicted on all counts.
Including bodily harm.
Yes. They were. They had some, like, scrapes and bruises and some other things that they had experienced throughout the day, but put a pin in that because we are going to come back to it later.
Okay.
From an outside perspective, life in Chowchilla seemed to return to normal. The kids and Ed Ray were celebrated as heroes, and they were all given a free trip to Disneyland with their families.
Wow.
Which is every child's dream, to be kidnapped and then brought to Disneyland. That'll make it better.
The first thing I would think of, yeah, I'm kidnapped, can't wait to be found and go to Disneyland.
Can't wait. Can't wait for that free trip to Disney. Yeah. Ugh. But the families of the victims knew differently. The kids would wake up from a dead sleep screaming over their nightmares, and as the kids grew older, many of them turned to drugs and or alcohol to cope with their trauma.
No.
4 years after the kidnappings, the lawyers representing Fred Woods and the Schoenfeld brothers appealed their convictions of bodily harm. An appellate court found that the children's injuries did not rise to the standard of bodily harm under the law. So, they were resentenced to life with the possibility of parole. I'm not sure, I can't prove it because I'm not a lawyer and I don't understand the law. But I don't know if, like, the legal standard of bodily harm or being convicted of bodily harm is that it has to have been, like, intentional bodily harm. Mm. So, if they got, like, scraped and, like, bruised or something like that in the drive or something like that, does it technically count as bodily harm if it was unintentional as mm-hmm. opposed to a side effect? That's what I'm guessing, but I do not know that for sure. Anyway.
What about the fact that the fans were, like, turned off? Like, they could have suffocated.
They were not turned off. No. No, they just stopped working. Mm. So, again, was it intentional bodily harm? And mm-hmm. technically, I'm not sure that that would have worked. That's more of the psychological thing. Because they didn't – they weren't – at the time – by the time they escaped, they were not, like, low on oxygen. Like, they weren't feeling that yet, necessarily, as far as I could tell.
Mm-hmm.
As of 2020, there had been about 60 parole hearings between the three men, and the victims of the kidnapping had to testify at every hearing, or they could choose to testify just to make sure that those men stayed in jail,
mm-hmm.
in prison. Richard Schoenfeld was granted parole in June of 2012, 36 years after the kidnapping. 3 years later, in 2015, James Schoenfeld was granted parole. Their good behavior in prison has continued after the release. Neither of the men have any criminal records and have seemed to keep a low profile. But Fred was a different story. He is considered to be the ringleader of the kidnappings, and while in prison, he had been caught with pornography and cell phones, which are obviously not permitted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the prosecutor who spoke in the 48-hour special that I watched on this was like, if they don't follow the rules in prison, it's a pretty good indication that they're probably not going to follow the rules when they get out of prison either. Yep. So that's why his parole kept getting denied and denied and denied, whereas the other two got out years earlier because they expressed remorse and they acted right in mm-hmm. prison. So, but he was eventually paroled in 2022. Today, there are three main spokespeople for the victims of the Chowchilla bus kidnapping. Larry Park was just 6 years old when he was kidnapped. After he was returned to his family, he was angry. Not at them, but just kind of at the world, and mm-hmm. especially at his kidnappers. He eventually turned to drugs and alcohol to cope with his mental distress, but he eventually realized that he needed to let go of his anger toward the kidnappers if he was ever going to find peace.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of the 48-hour special in 2020, he was 9 years sober. He owns his own, I know, he owns his own handyman business and volunteers as a pastor at his local church. In 2016, Larry released a book about his experiences titled The Chowchilla Kidnapping, Why Me? Jennifer Brown was 9 years old at the time of the kidnapping. She had to sleep with a nightlight on until very recently. Today, she's a wife, mother, and executive assistant, and despite her hardships, she's lived an amazing life. Michael Marshall was 14 at the time of the kidnapping. Today, he is a husband, father, and truck driver. As of 2020, he was sober for 8 years with the help of his friends, family, and his therapy dog, Blue, who is adorable, by the way. So cute. So anyway, that is the Chowchilla bus kidnapping.
I feel so sad for those kids. Like, the thought of being buried underground is terrifying. And then, like, the thought of, like, slowly suffocating because the fans were turned off, terrifying.
Yeah.
How horrible. Also, gosh, they were such good, thought out plans for just to make such stupid, simple mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, good that they made those mistakes. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, those children should not have been kidnapped in the first place. And I'm like, glad that they're all alive.
Right.
But, like, from a criminal mindset, how dumb. Goodness.
I know.
Laid out documentation.
Mm-hmm. And not to burn it. Nail
the coffin.
Yeah. Like, and especially, like, after you knew that, like, something had gone awry, why didn't you just burn your papers? Or throw them away. Put them in a trash receptacle.
Right.
Like, do anything to not just have a piece
Although,
of paper.
Although, I feel like,
plans.
Given their intelligence, if they did throw it away, they probably would have thrown it away with their names at the corner of the paper.
Probably.
By Fred and I forgot the other two.
James Joe? And Richard.
James.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not.
I'm glad that it was quick though. Like 36?
Yes. I'm glad that they. Hours. Yes. I'm definitely glad that they weren't in there for longer than they were. I think that is definitely good. Like, all things considered, this happened very quickly. I did ask my mom, because my mom would have been in high school when this happened, and I asked her, I was like, did you hear about the Chowchilla bus kidnapping? Like, when you were in school, did you know about it? Because she was in Idaho at the time, so she wasn't, like, crazy far away from California. And I gave her a little refresher and she was like, yes, I do remember when that happened. I don't I wouldn't have remembered that it was called Chowchilla bus kidnapping, or like I didn't know that it happened there, or I wouldn't have remembered that. But I definitely knew what it was and that it was happening at the time, which I also thought was very interesting because a lot of the times she does not know.
Well, I think this police force did a really good job of, like, immediately investigating and bringing in the right people.
Yes, I do, too. I think that they did a lot of things right. And then I think that there were a lot of good choices made on the part of mostly Michael, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. For the years afterward, so just a little bit of context here, for the years afterward, Ed Ray was really hailed as, like, the one who, like, kept them going and kept them, like, trying and optimistic and all this kind of stuff. And the kids were pretty happy to let that kind of be the case, because he really, even though he might not have been the main hero in this case, he was still definitely, like, his actions were heroic and he did a lot for the kids on his bus. He really cared about them and did everything that he could. But after he passed away, a few of the kids kind of came forward and were like, you know, Michael was the one who really, like, encouraged us to keep going. And he was the one who had to kind of snap Ed Ray out of his funk. Because he was basically, like, at one point, he just put his head in his hands and was like, we're all going to die. And Michael was like, no, we're not going to, we're not going there.
Yeah.
We're going to get out of this. And so he was really the one who made things happen, which is incredible because he was just 14 at the time.
Yeah.
How many 14-year-olds would have, like, the wherewithal to pull it together, not only for themselves, which would be incredible in and of itself, but also for all those other kids too. So
he just had natural born perseverance.
Yeah, that's kind of what it seems.
Especially
to me too.
After uncovering the manhole to find, like, another obstacle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I think he would have been. Exactly.
Yeah.
But he didn't.
No, he just kept going. He was like, why stop now? Even though I'm tired. Yeah. No, he's pretty cool. And I really like his dog. So, anyway, yes, that was the Chowchilla bus kidnapping. Even though I am sorry that those kids suffered for all of those years, I'm very much
I'm
glad that
they're
alive. Yes. Yep. And I think that, you know, as time goes on, like in the 1970s, I don't think it would have occurred to most parents to be like, you know what I should do after my kid was kidnapped? I should probably get them therapy.
Yeah. Like,
tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, like as time goes on and therapy becomes like kind of, you know, destigmatized, I think that they have been able to like kind of tap into that and, you know, just have time and all of these experiences that have helped them to heal. So I feel like as time goes on, it actually becomes a progressively happier and happier story, which is also really, really nice. So anyway, that is the Chowchilla bus kidnapping. And next week we will be back with another true crime case. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.
If you liked the show, please leave us a great review and don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Wicked Within Podcast.